There's only one station for music, news, and information that affects your community.
Only one station.
The Community Station.
103.7.
It is 5:20 in Muskegon, a beautiful day. Well, I don't know. I guess it's going to be a beautiful day, Connie. We know. It looks like it might rain later on today. No. Connie, you've been hanging out with us for a while. I got to commend you.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. This is Connie Nesberry, the wife of Dr. Dale's Mary Nesberry. Got to put that out there, especially with the news coming out today. The MCC is purchasing YMCA.
Yes.
And you probably knew this the whole time. Didn't say nothing to us all week.
I know. I'm so good.
Keeping a secret, right? Yep. But you are a family counselor for people who don't know, right?
Yes.
And what else? What other titles you have?
I don't do one-on-one or family counseling anymore. I do consulting, though, with businesses or maybe a family just to get them on the right track, get them to where they need to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why do you have a passion for this? Because you've been hanging out with us all week, and you've been lining up some people from Rain. What's your passion behind all this?
I've been working in this for over 20 years.
20 years.
Yep.
Wow. All over the country?
Mainly in Michigan and Massachusetts is where I started.
Okay.
That's where I got my degree.
Good. We got two beautiful young ladies here from the Health West who are experts at this subject that they'll be talking about. I'm going to tackle the hardest name first. Joe Allen, Reindress.
You got it right.
I got it right. Okay. And the easy one is Kelly Friends. How y'all doing today?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
Great. Okay, Joe Allen, I guess we start off with you because you are as part of Suicide Prevention Coalition. You are part of Muskegon County Domestic Violence Task Force. You are a mental health first aid instructor, an adult, youth, law enforcement, and veterans. You are also a suicide prevention instructor. You're involved with CASA at the Muskegon Child Abuse Council, which is going to be here tomorrow. You're a clinical supervisor. You've done a lot. And so I want to talk to you about this subject of sexual abuse and preparedness and being aware. You know, because I know you probably got some tips you can give out to the community on being aware and things we need to look out for, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
So my new role at Community Mental Health, well, Health West, formerly Community Mental Health, is the psychological first aid specialist. So I lead a team that responds to traumatic events in the community. So I talk a lot about trauma, and we know that childhood sexual abuse is one form of trauma that can happen to you among other kinds of trauma.
Right.
So in working with people that have been sexually abused, there are usually lots of times where you might notice some changes in children. Also, there are people that never talk about it as adults, but they have it in their past. So part of that is sort of understanding that people come from all kinds of places and have all different experiences, and that when they behave in certain ways, maybe it comes from a place of trauma, not just a place of acting out or behaving in a certain way because they're maladjusted. It can come from a place of the things that happened to them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, they adapt.
Yeah.
Let's talk about an adult.
Okay.
Who might have happened as a kid. They never said anything to anybody. You see certain things in them.
Well, some things can be predicted as in the future. PTSD or PTSD-like symptoms can be predicted. An increase in substance use, having trouble forming relationships, having trouble trusting people would be another one. Being a victim of other types of violence. So those are some of the common ones I can think of. Sort of coming from a place of guilt and shame, not having a lot of self-worth as an adult. Those are some adults that may be affected by childhood sexual trauma.
Well, what about the kids? The kids who don't talk about it, it happened at an early age, and mm-hmm. they're in high school now. Will we notice anything different?
I think you notice probably a lot of the same things I just mentioned. There can be symptoms of PTSD, depression, anxiety, being isolated, not trusting people, wanting to maybe even being more sexually active at times, being the victim, getting in relationships that aren't the best for them. Those would be some common things. Substance use would be another common thing. Getting in with the wrong crowd, you know, behaving in ways that are, you know, not lawful. Having trouble focusing in school. All those things can be related to a trauma during childhood. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I guess this kind of calls into the study that you do, Kelly, the Adverse Childhood Experience Study.
Yes, it's the ACE study is what it's commonly called, and it's not a study that I developed by any means.
Why
but
you wrote this thing?
Right. I'm a big deal then. the study actually, the roots started way back in 1985 by a doctor out in San Diego named Dr. Vincent Folletti. Okay. And he actually worked for Kaiser Permanente, and he was studying obesity, of all things. Mm-hmm. And he was studying some interventions, and he found, as he was proceeding with this study, that the people that lost the most weight were mm-hmm. actually the ones that dropped out of the study. And he found that was kind of interesting, and so he followed up with that, and it directly correlates with what you were asking Joellen about the symptoms you'd see as an adult, because as he dove more into studying why individuals were dropping out of this study, he found it had direct correlation with their adverse childhood experiences, some of which could be sexual abuse, but also not limited to sexual abuse. It could be physical abuse. It could be certain household conditions. And then he actually teamed with the Center of Disease Control and did a widespread study, which is what's called the ACE study, Adverse Childhood Experiences. It was very large. It was 17,000 people. And they narrowed down these adverse experiences to 10 things. And if these 10 things happened in your childhood, they were able to make direct correlation to all of the predictors of early death.
Oh, wow.
Significant disease. Of those would be included alcoholism, alcohol abuse, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, depression, fatal death, poor heart-related quality of life, drug use, STDs, liver disease, obesity, smoking, many chronic health problems that we deal with as a society, and they were able to directly correlate those to these adverse childhood experiences.
Can you name some of those childhood experiences?
Yeah, I can. Absolutely. So there's 10 that they identified as the core problems. And I want to mention one of the things that the study also did is it said, you know, if you answer yes to one, they typically don't happen in isolation. You answer once, you were significantly more likely, 87% more likely to answer yes to another one.
Oh, wow.
And so your ACE score is a direct result of how many questions you answer yes to. And so one would be, did a parent or other adult in the household often or very often swear at you, insult you, put you down, or humiliate you? That would be one example of an adverse childhood experience.
And that alone has a mental effect on a kid, right?
Yes, because the stress that you encounter during these adverse childhood experiences does affect the way that your brain develops, the way that you perceive the world, the way you perceive yourself in the world. And what they found was, for example, sexual promiscuity. Mm-hmm. That might be my solution to help make my world make sense. To society, it's a problem.
Right.
It's causing STDs, it's unwanted pregnancies, things like that.
Right.
To the individual, that's being used as a solution to help me cope with this experience I had as a child. That's definitely what they found with obesity. The weight helped them feel protected from unwanted sexual attention,
right,
or sometimes physical abuse helped them feel more secure in themselves. And so when they lost the weight, some of that traumatic experience came back to them, and they didn't want to live without that weight because they hadn't processed through or worked on that trauma from their childhood.
Wow. Wow. What is another question, if you don't mind?
Okay. No, I don't mind at all. So another one that I think is more obvious that people would say, well, yes, that's definitely an adverse childhood experience, would be the one regarding the sexual abuse. Did an adult or person at least 5 years older than you ever touch or fondle you or have you touch their body in a sexual way or attempt or actually have oral, anal, or vaginal intercourse with you?
Wow.
So that's... Wow. That, I think, is one that someone would say, well, yes, that's obviously a traumatic experience for a child to go through, that sexual abuse.
Right.
And some of these adverse experiences are more obvious to the onlooker, but some of them aren't. And again, what they found is these experiences have a cumulative toll, meaning the more that you experience, there's a significant statistical increase in your... predisposition to many chronic health conditions, mental health conditions, as well as physical health conditions, and definitely early death.
Wow, wow. Yeah. Talking to the two deep workers right here. What y'all do over there is commendable. You got anything you want to say, Connie, before we go? I've got a question, some more questions I've got to ask.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I'm going to talk about trauma, suicide. I understand it's a high suicide rate in Muskegon. It's like, you know, on the rise. Mike Pine's always making us aware of that. And we talked about trauma and the correlation to suicide. Could you, if you don't mind, talk about that.
So, I would guess that most people that have completed suicide or have suicidal thoughts or have suicide attempts would have an ACE score. I don't know if any studies have been done directly, but I know that our Suicide Death Review Board is doing, like, based on the information that we have, we're going back and looking, sort of like checking ACE scores.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that we're doing because we feel like the correlation is there. We know the correlation is there with mental health, and we know that people that complete suicide, like I think it's 90% of them, I would probably say a little bit higher, have a mental health condition. So to me, the correlation is there, and it's untreated. It's the untreated part of the trauma and stress and difficulty with coping that leads to that with young people as well as even maybe when they're an adult.
Right.
Because that might be not the only thing that happens to someone, too.
Right. And I've definitely seen the young kids, because you hear the kids talking about it when a young kid take their life.
Mm-hmm.
I see the police reports of the drug overdoses and mm-hmm. of the adults' suicide, but you really don't know the dynamics. But the kids, what are we as adults, what are we as parents doing wrong that we don't notice some of the things with our kids?
One of the things I wanted to mention was as they studied these adverse childhood experiences and those that maybe you had 10 out of 10, yet you were able to find success in your life and overcome those, because that does happen very frequently. Although the odds may be against you, many people among us that are extremely successful. That was one of the things they found in the ACE study, is that this is not people different than us. We all have adverse childhood experiences. This right. is across all barriers. But another thing that's across all barriers is the taboo. It's really taboo to speak about these things.
Mm.
And it's when you aren't speaking about these things and you're feeling more shame because of what you've been through, and you're isolating the opportunity to talk about these things, and you feel more and more different than everybody else. And especially with youth, this is, you know, we find the individuals that have a support network, and that's actually one of the protective factors. Mm-hmm. If you're going through a traumatic experience, and you have individuals in your life that you feel accept you no matter what, individuals in this life that you feel you can speak to about what an experience was like for you, and feel that although they may not agree with how that experience affected you, that they're there to listen to you, that's called a protective factor.
Mm-hmm.
What we see in our work is when you have a lack of those protective factors, that's when you see the bigger effect in a negative way of these traumatic experiences. And I did bring some of the pieces of the ACE study with me, and to answer your question in relationship to suicide attempts and the ACE score, they did find that compared to persons that had an ACE score of 0, which, by the way, they found really not common that right. you would have an ACE score of zero.
Right.
Those with an ACE score of four or more were twice as likely to be smokers, 12 times more likely to have attempted suicide, 7 times more likely to be alcoholic, and 10 times more likely to have injected street drugs.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Wow. What can parents do? What kind of suggestions will y'all give out to parents?
I think that doing this radio program is an excellent support for the community as far as awareness and educating people about one type of trauma, sexual abuse, but also learning that the ways that we cope with one type of trauma as a community can help with all types of trauma that's on the ACE study. So knowing about, being educated about child sexual abuse and the stigma around it and how that affects it, and knowing that there are things that can be done to help people that experience it, even if we can't prevent it necessarily, are excellent. Kelly just gave me a list of some of the other family protective factors.
Okay.
One of them we just talked about was having Kelly talked about having family that surrounds you and sort of that listens to you and is supportive of you, feeling connected to your community, mm-hmm. having an opportunity to have roles in your household. I always kind of think of it like people sort of paying attention to what kids are doing, like teachers sort of paying attention to what you're doing, a coach that you can talk to, someone that you trust to talk to when you're not feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
If you have that, if someone's checking to see if you're doing well in school, or is concerned about that, if you have people that are talking to you about your goals,
mm-hmm.
if your parents have jobs and feel good about what they do, having housing that's adequate, of course, meeting your basic needs, having family that does that, having access to good health care, social services, mental health services, if they're required. So those are some of the things that come to mind.
If they need help, what number? Because I know you got a lot of numbers over at Help West. And I know that y'all probably one of the biggest providers for dealing with mental health here in Muskegon. How can they get in contact if a kid needs help? They need somebody to talk to. They might not have a parent in the household. Might have a single parent who probably works a couple jobs, and they don't have a good relationship. They don't have the granny around or grandpa around that they could talk to. What number should they dial?
Go ahead.
Like you said, there's lots of numbers you can dial at Health West, and one of the things I really pride ourselves on is if you can get a hold of anybody at Health West and tell them what your needs are, they'll get you to the right place. So I wouldn't say there's a wrong number to call if you're going to call Health West. Another thing that I tell a lot of the youth that I speak to are the young adults, because they all have these really smart telephones mm-hmm. on their palm all the time,
right.
is we've worked really hard to make a user-friendly website that they definitely could visit as well, and that's going to be giving them a lot of information, kind of normalizing maybe some of their interest. That website's www.healthwest.net. That's where I always get nervous and I'm going to say .org, but it's not. It's .net.
Wow. Tell me some of the stories you might have seen in this area without giving out names that really, really bothered you. And maybe the parent didn't even know that was going on. Any stories?
Stories you want to know about when a parent didn't even know what was going
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
You know, a common theme I'm definitely willing to talk about is when a lot of times what happens is family members of youth, family members of adults can be huge advocates, and they can bring them in and they can tell you list and list of what's wrong with that person.
Mm-hmm.
They use drugs and alcohol. They don't go to school. They don't go to work. They won't get out of bed. They're sleeping around. They're running away. Everything that's wrong. And a lot of times when you slow down and ask the person, well, why do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Or what happened to you before you started to do that? Their behavior tends to make sense. I'm not saying that we approve of that behavior, that we right. think it's good, but typically the problems are actually that individual's solution to their problem. And if you engage them enough to get to the nitty-gritty of why does this make sense for you? Why are you doing this to yourself? They can start connecting the dots. And I see a lot of times in families, having that conversation is just not something they're willing to do, or it's uncomfortable, or they don't know how to start having that conversation. And so that would be a theme of something that I think if I could get the word out to families across Muskegon County would be that it's safe to talk about these experiences. And a lot of times people are yearning to explain why this behavior makes sense for them.
Do the kids believe that the parents or the guardian's going to hear them or believe them?
Not all the time. I think that almost all the time there's hope. They really hope that their parents will understand if they could get the story out and explain it with words, which honestly, when we're talking about youth, sometimes they haven't even been able to put words to it themselves. If the traumatic experience happened at a really young age, sometimes they haven't even connected the dots themselves, and it's by asking those questions that they start to develop a story about how that happened that they could explain in words.
And so for that, do you use expressive therapies there, art therapy, other ways to get that out?
Absolutely. We have many individuals at HealthWest that have been trained in trauma-focused CBT that is an evidence-based model that's specifically to address traumatic experiences in youth, and that incorporates many different forms of therapy to get to the actual story. It also, you know, one of the things with working with children, and this comes from TFCBT, is that you can work with just a youth and you might see some results. But if you work with the youth and the parents together, you're going to get much more bang for your buck, because the real motivator of change is the parent, the home, the household where the youth lives. And so a lot of what we do at HealthWest definitely is to reach out to the whole family system and not just address the person who may have experienced that traumatic experience, but it really, it affects the whole family, it affects the whole community when someone has to go through these things.
Is it possible for somebody to experience this kind of trauma, serious trauma, and it have no effect on them at all? And don't talk to anybody about it?
I would say that there's lots of ways to get past trauma that doesn't involve necessarily, you know, traditional mental health services, but having some of those protective factors in place that we talked about, and sort of where you come from as a person and how much trauma you experience. If you experience one traumatic event and you sort of have a coach and have people you're close to and have things you're good at and feel connected to your community, and there are other ways to sort of process through things that aren't necessarily require therapy. They say, you know, it can be a benefit, but it's not necessarily the only way to recover. That being said, I think that if I was a parent and my child disclosed childhood sexual trauma or child abuse of any kind to me, I would need some support. So I think that, you know, giving family support is where we always should start. Right. Because yes, the child is the victim, but consider if you're the parent, what that would feel like to you. Like you didn't protect your child, even though you didn't know this was happening. But and if you can work through what's going on with you, then you can be an excellent support to your child. Does that make sense?
Yes. Have you seen a situation where the parent is reluctant of having a kid get help because they're scared that the kid might reveal a perpetrator in the household or in the past?
I've definitely seen parents fearful of discussing trauma that they know their child has been exposed to. I don't know if I have seen exactly what you're talking about, but I think a lot of times parents are fearful that talking about it's going to make it worse.
Yes.
You know, I definitely think it's taboo to speak about, and if my child could just forget about that, if that could just be blocked, then we wouldn't have, you know, it's a very scary, uncomfortable, as a parent myself, you know, there's a lot of, I think, shame and responsibility. Absolutely. That parents feel. And so I think there's a lot of reasons why a parent would want to avoid addressing a traumatic experience their child's been exposed to, or addressing their own traumatic experience they had as a child that maybe they find is now interfering with their abilities to parent. I think there's a lot of reasons that make sense why people would want to avoid those things. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why Joellen and I and many other people in the community and at Health West want to make sure that we're talking about these kinds of studies and we're talking about these things so that when you're sitting alone thinking, man, no parent has ever had to deal with this before. I wish I knew somebody else that had to deal with this before and could help me through this, that this affects many of us in many different ways. And like I said before, one of the biggest things they found from the ACE study was that people have these experiences. People have these experiences all the time, and people survive them. People can function. People can do great things with their lives despite these experiences. But it's when we don't, when we feel overwhelmed with shame and don't address them and kind of isolate ourselves, that's where we get in a real dangerous situation.
Wow. Wow. Before we go, go down the line, and I know at the end, Connie going to give us some books, but Joellen, can you give us some tips on this whole subject? And I'm going to get some tips from you too, Kelly.
Okie dokie.
Tips. Okay, so I'm going to go put on my psychological first aid hat. So if you know that somebody's in crisis and you want to be a helpful person to them, my suggestions would be to listen without judgment. Try to not overreact, even though some things that you might be hearing might be very difficult to hear. Make sure that if you're ready and you're the right person to listen to somebody, that you're in a good place yourself. Encourage people to take care of their physical health. Have people examine where their supports are. So if your friend is telling you that her daughter was sexually abused, and so you're two moms talking, how to be a supportive mom, parent, like community member or teacher to this family would be these type of things. Like, where can you get support? What are you doing to take care of yourself? What do you need? It's very normal to feel the way that you're feeling. It's very normal for your child to have all these types of different behaviors and experiences right after a traumatic event. All of us have them. And then we also have ways to cope. And what have you done to get through things in the past?
Right.
And you're not alone. And acknowledging, the first thing with pretty much anybody is acknowledging that there's a lot of shame and guilt that goes along with trauma. Oh. And that even for people that take care of people, like first responders, when they take care of people that have been traumatized, mm-hmm. there's a lot of guilt that can come along with, what if I'd have done this, or if I could have done that.
Right.
So acknowledging that that's a normal way to feel after some way, even though we know we don't have ESP, right?
Right.
But we
right.
still have this. We still have this reaction.
Right.
Acknowledging that, validating it, that it's okay. And how can I be supportive to you, and who else can be supportive to you to get past it?
Wow, great, great. Kelly?
I would say that really feeling connected is a huge protective factor. So for a youth, it's feeling connected to my family. For a parent, it's feeling connected to my neighbors, my community, my family. For a community, it's feeling connected to each other and feeling like my community is safe and important. So it's wherever you stand in your experience with whether it's yourself who's experienced a trauma or somebody in your family, somebody in your community, knowing that affects everybody. And one of the best things you could do is reach out to them and ask, instead of what's wrong with you, what happened to you? You know, to decrease that opportunity for shame to set in.
To bag out.
Yeah.
To bag out.
Yeah.
Exactly. Connie, you have some books there.
Yeah, I'm going to just give you a couple of them here. But one of the standards is The Courage to Heal. And it's a pretty easy to read book. And it also has different chapters. So you can skip over to the chapter you want, and avoid the one you're not ready for. So that's kind of good. It's by Ellen Bass and Laura Davis. Another one, we were talking about the symptoms that people usually have from this, but it doesn't mean you have to, like, say, go into substance abuse or whatever. There are a lot of super survivors, too, on the other end of the spectrum that are overachievers and stuff, and that's how they're coping. So there's a book called Super Survivors, The Surprising Link Between Suffering and Success by David Feldman. And then I just want to let you know there is an app you can download. I'm pretty sure it's free. If you have a smartphone, it's called PTSD Coach. And that's a really good one to check out your symptoms. You know, if you're not good, doing good, it'll say, hey, time to get help or time to call somebody. So that's an easy one. PTSD Coach, it's an easy one to use.
It's from the Veterans Administration.
It's part of what now?
It's from the Veterans Administration. So if you look up their VA website, you can find it there for free.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Good. Thank you. Thank you for sharing information. 211, I think, is the telephone number. You can get a lot of resources there. And here, I'm going to give out a number I know at Health West. So y'all got 1,000 numbers over there. 231-724-6618. That's in the customer service department. And they can get you some help if you need someone to talk to, or talk to your local pastor, talk to a senior in your family, and talk to somebody you trust at school. Reach out to somebody. I think the worst thing you can do is go through this thing alone and don't say anything.
Yeah.
You got to share it to somebody. Thank you. Thank you, Joellen. Thank you, Kelly. Also, thank you, Connie, for being here with us. Anything you want to share before you go, Connie?
Oh, I just think it's wonderful that you're doing this all week.
Thank you, Paul.
This is so needed.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
All right. Keep it here. It's Afternoon Jams, 103.7 The Beat.